What?
Yes, you can.
No, I'm supposed to be at the airport. Can't even make an announcement in 15 minutes. I'm going to get through a little bit of this stuff. Okay, very quickly. On surrogate motherhood, we left off last time talking about surrogate motherhood. My sister, as usual, asked a question that I couldn't answer about why is that different than adoption. I'm still not sure it is. And somebody brought this to my attention. Professor Salvatore Mancuso, I guess, I don't know how to say it. He's the head of the Institute of Gynecology and Obstetrics at the Catholic University of Rome. Presented a paper a few years ago arguing that mothers undergo permanent changes during pregnancy in which they inherit characteristics from the child and from the father. So if you're a mother carrying a baby, that baby affects you. There's communication that goes back and forth, both information and chemical changes that take place in you where you're actually being conformed to some degree to that child and to a lesser degree, to the father. So you're taking on characteristics from the child and the father. This is this guy's theory, and I wasn't able to verify it with anything else, and I wasn't able to find any either corroboration or refutation of it, so I'm not sure if it's even true. It sounds reasonable to me, though, and if it is true, then it seems like that would have implications for the ethics of surrogate motherhood, because then if you got the woman being conformed to some degree to the child and to the father, that means there's some sense in which the woman would be, it would be like she'd be becoming one flesh with that father in some limited sense. And so then that would bring up the ethical question of whether you as a surrogate would want to become one flesh in that limited way with the father of the baby that you would be carrying. Again, so you could argue that that's not what one flesh is about, or that's not involved in, or if this is even true, but I just wanted to throw that in the mix as we were thinking about the surrogate mother thing. All right, now let me just quickly talk about medical ethics, and then we'll probably talk about bioethics next time. The practice of medicine is a good thing. That's my view on medical ethics. There are some people who say it's a lack of faith. It's a lack of faith in God's ability to heal. They say that you shouldn't go to a doctor, you shouldn't use medicine because God, you should trust God to heal. People who say that don't understand the wonderful doctrine of providence. That is, God doesn't have to always do things through miracles. God's work through normal means is just as astounding and astonishing and wonderful as his work through miraculous means. So whether he heals me through a miracle or he heals me through a doctor, what does it matter? It's still God doing the work. When we say, God, heal me, and I demand you do it miraculously, that's not faith, that's just arrogance. You've all heard the joke about the guy who's in the flood, and he's standing on his roof, and the flood comes up, and he says, God, please deliver me, save me, and the guy comes with a boat, and he says, no, I'm not going to get the boat, I'm trusting God to save me, and then another boat, and then a helicopter, and he keeps turning him down, and then he drowns. And goes to heaven and questions God. I trusted you to save me. And God says, well, I sent two boats and a helicopter. What do you expect? That joke really illustrates what this same attitude. You know, if God has provided natural means for you to be healed and we turn them down because we require God to act only in a certain way, that's not faith. So medicine is good. People who reject medicine are being presumptuous. In 1 Timothy 5:23, Paul told Timothy, use a little wine because of your stomach and your frequent illnesses. That is an endorsement of medicine. It's crude medicine, it's the crude medicine of their day, but he's saying take a chemical to take care of the disease that you have in your stomach. That's medicine. So it's not wrong to use medicine for the purpose of restoring physical health. Although, if you listen to the counseling class, you'll find that I do believe it's wrong, or at least questionable, to use chemicals to attain spiritual health. But for that, get the biblical counseling class. Anyway, medicine for physical health is good. But also, we should remember that physical health is not the most important thing. Our world tends to think it is. Nothing's more important than getting rid of disease and suffering. And that's a worldly idea that we shouldn't allow that to affect our thinking. Some people are of the opinion, that missionaries, when they go into the mission field, the very first thing they should do is take care of the people's physical health and physical needs, and build aqueducts for them, and give them medicine, and do, you know, take care of all their physical needs and feed them and do all that first before they have the right to preach the gospel. That is backwards. That is backwards. You have the right to preach the gospel just because you're an emissary of the king who's commanded you to go preach the gospel to everyone. And you don't have to earn the right. You could never earn the right to preach the gospel. God's given you the mandate to preach the gospel. He has the right to preach it to whoever he wants. And people's needs, for their spiritual needs, are greater than their physical needs. If they're about to die, all the more reason to tell them the gospel before they die. So if you can gain a hearing by providing some physical need, fine. Although you have to realize when you do that, you're putting the people at some risk, because then you're putting up the risk of greater risk of false conversion, because they might think that's the fee for what you're providing. So you got to watch out for that. But it's more important that you preach the gospel to someone than to feed that person. Anyway, medicine is a good thing, and that's my view on medical ethics. Now let's just begin talking about cloning. We'll get into bioethics now, and I'm trying to condense some of this stuff because I'm really anxious to get to our next class, which is going to be hermeneutics. But anyway, we'll finish this up. Let me talk about cloning. In science fiction, a clone is a copy of another person. So if I were cloned, there would be two me's. That's science fiction. The cloning that's taking place now is not like that. All cloning is, and I finally found this out, I just did some research on it this week, and I didn't really realize this. All cloning is the creation of the equivalent of an identical twin. Clones are identical twins. Regular twins are produced when there are two eggs, each fertilized by a separate sperm, and then they grow together in the womb. Regular twins are no more genetically related to each other than any other two siblings are related to each other. However, identical twins are different. Identical twins happen when there's one egg fertilized by one sperm, and then it divides. When that happens, we call those identical twins because they have the same DNA. Now, to produce a clone, what they do is they take a woman's egg, remove the nucleus, which is where her genetic material would be passed on. They remove that. And in its place, they take whoever they're going to clone. They find some person that they're going to clone. They take one of his cells. They put that in there, his or her cell. They put that in there as the nucleus, and they stimulate that thing to get it to grow. And as it grows and develops, it develops into a person who's genetically the same as that donor. That is, they have the same DNA. So a clone is just the exact same thing as an identical twin, except identical twins are always the same age, whereas a clone would be different age. But the thing you have to realize is identical twins are not really identical. They have identical DNA, but they're not identical. They have different fingerprints, for example, and different personalities, and different souls. But they do have the same DNA, and they tend to be very, very similar for that reason. And that's what a clone is. If you meet identical twins, you don't think of them as two copies of the same person. You think of them as two separate persons. If you strike up a friendship with one of them, you don't assume that the other one is automatically just as close a friend just because you have this. I mean, they're separate people, right? If you share the gospel with one of them and he becomes a Christian, you don't assume the other one's going to heaven just because this one. I mean, they're separate. Two separate individuals with two distinct souls. Same thing with a clone. If they ever cloned a human being, it would be the same way. Cloning is the creation of identical twins, two individuals that have the same DNA but different and unique individuals nonetheless. So there's nothing unique about cloning. It's been going on for as long as women have been giving birth to identical twins. It's just that now we've figured out a way to do it that creates a huge likelihood of miscarriages and birth defects and deformities and poor health and early death. We've just taken what God already did with identical twins and found out a much less healthy way of doing it. Now, what about ethical problems with cloning? Before considering the ethics of the process itself, what I want to point out is even if there's nothing wrong with cloning, the motives that people have for human cloning, I think, are suspect. If you go to the Human Cloning Foundation website, you can read 22 different arguments in favor of human cloning. And some of them there's no problem with. You know, they expect medical breakthroughs, and they expect to be able to clone organs so that you can get new organs for people that need them, and they could save endangered species, and plants that we really need could be cloned or whatever. And I that's fine.
Are they cloning the organ or the person to grow?
No, the organ. They're not doing it. This is just in the future, but they're thinking maybe they can clone an actual organ. Seems doubtful they could do that, but if they, obviously if they clone a person just for an organ, and they say, okay, we're done with you, and yeah, that would be bad. The fact that, and then there's some of their arguments that are really circular. Like one of their arguments I got a kick out of is it would be good for funding of research because people who want to be cloned would be likely to donate money. So cloning is good because if you do it, people will donate money towards more cloning. That seems like they're assuming their conclusion there. They're assuming that it's a good thing to fund the research for cloning. Anyway, that's a little circular. And then there's some really just plain bad arguments. And here's some of them. Bad parents. Quote, human cloning allows you the opportunity to participate in the choosing of the parents of your clone. We would just do so much better job matching children with parents than God does. That's basically what that one is saying. A child's right, another one, a child's right to be better than its parents. How do you like that one? You have the right to be better than your parents. The clone can be made from superior genetic material and sooner or later will end up with a superior race, right? Sound familiar? To be a better parent, raising a clone would be like having a child with an instruction manual because you would already know everything about the child from the way that the donor was. Because of the special relationship that twins have, they tend to be closer to each other. Economics. Countries that fail to clone will suffer economically. So these are some of the arguments. Yeah, I don't know. The more we engineer a family situation by picking out just the right genetic donor and just the right parents and all that, the more pressure we put on the child to conform to our plans, and it would overturn God's intended design for the family. That's my concern with this kind of reasoning. Procreation would be an asexual process instead of a sexual process, how God designed it. The baby would be the twin brother or sister of the parent, and he would only have one progenitor instead of two. It would just overturn everything that God designed. I mean, you could have all kinds of problems with that. A mother could have if you cloned a woman, and then the daughter grows up who's a clone of her mother, and genetically identical, suddenly the father, she turns 20, and the father sees the reappearance of this woman that he fell in love with when she was 20 or something like that. I mean, it just seems like it would be an awful lot of problems. And given our society's tendency to attribute everything only to the physiological causes, the weaknesses of the clone would be written off as inevitable because the donor had those genetic weaknesses and they would be expected and so on. Let me give you a quote from... Oh, and by the way, if you want to read about cloning, I'm just going to quickly go over this, but if you want to read in depth about the ethics of cloning and all the ethics of all the bioethical issues, read the President's Council on Bioethics report. The President put together this Council on Bioethics, and I expected it to be all this political gobbledygook. It was great. There was a lot of insightful things that they came up with. And I've got the website there in the manuscript. You can look that up, and it's really some great stuff. Listen to this quote from that group. Gifts and blessings we learn to accept as gratefully as we can. Products of our wills we try to shape in accord with our desires. See what they're saying? You get a child who comes to you the natural way in marriage, and you see it as a gift and a blessing, and so you accept it with gratitude. You get a child that you've engineered through your own will, and your attitude is going to be to just shape it and conform it to what you're trying to produce. Procreation, he goes on, the quote goes on, procreation as traditionally understood invites acceptance rather than reshaping, engineering, or designing the next generation. I thought that was an interesting thought. And several of the arguments that they gave in favor of human cloning on this other website were... demonstrate the danger of the identity confusion that'll happen if there will be clones. There's a tendency to confuse the identity of the clone with the person who donated the cell already. Listen to some of these arguments. to have a better, we should do this in order to have a better sense of identity. That is, you would know who you are because of the DNA, because your DNA came from someone else, and you could look at them and say, "Now I know who I am because I another copy of that person." To take steps towards immortality, human cloning. Quote: human cloning essentially means taking a human being's DNA and reversing its age back to zero. So it's immortality. See, they're confused. They think that it's the same person living on through that one cell that develops into another person. That's not true. It would be a separate person. And that's not how we're to pursue immortality anyway, obviously. Living on through the later born twin. Another one, you want your clone to lead a life that was meant to be yours. You missed out on this life. You were robbed of this life that was meant to be yours, and now someone else, you can live that life through cloning. Again, confusion about the fact that it's a different person. One survey that I saw that I thought was interesting found that a large percentage of the population would like to be cloned. Zero in the survey wanted to be a clone. I think that's kind of interesting. Some other arguments. To make a future couple financially secure, you can give them your money as well as your cell. And then because you believe in freedom, quote, in a free society, we know that we must tolerate some views and that we don't agree with so that we may all be free. For this reason, human cloning should be allowed. In other words, everyone should be able to do absolutely anything they want, even if it harms and kills children, in the name of freedom. Another reason, because so many people want cloning, we should do it. Another reason, religious freedom. We should do human cloning for the purpose of religious freedom. That one I thought was interesting. I thought, what is that? I read it, quote, at least two religions believe in cloning as one of their tenets. Now, I thought that was interesting. Evidently, every adherent to those religions have been living in constant sin all along now, and still will be until they finally start doing human cloning. So I don't know what religions those are, but they're in bad shape. Because the sick will demand it. Gay couples, here's another one. Human cloning could allow for two gay men to take 23 chromosomes from each male and put it into a single egg so they could truly have a baby of their own. And then the last one, a cure for baldness. So they put that one in there too. Obviously, there's problems with the motivations. You see those motivations, you wonder, what's wrong with just the normal way of having kids? And you know, why do we want to go to all this problem of cloning when we can just, you know, the normal way is really just working great. And then you see these kind of motives, it seems like they're not persuasive, are they? Now, that's the ethics of the motives. There are also some ethics, I think, with the process itself. I don't think we should clone. I think we should oppose human cloning for some very important reasons. And primarily those reasons, and we'll get into this next time, but primarily the reasons have to do with the ethics of medical research and human experimentation. They don't know how to do it well. Cloning does not work very well. It causes all kinds of problems. And in order for it to begin to work well, there'd have to be a lot of human experimentation. And that's an ethical area that has been widely discussed for decades. The early part of the 20th century, there were some terrible ethical abuses that came out, that were carried out by research scientists where they were experimenting on human beings. You're all familiar with Nazi Germany, where they experimented on the Jews and did horrible things to them in the name of medical experimentation. And that predated Hitler, by the way. And it's not just in Nazi Germany, but in the United States. From 1963 to 1966 at Willowbrook State School in New York, which was a state-run institution in New York, retarded children were purposely infected with hepatitis so that they could study the disease. At first, they infected them by feeding the kids extracts of stools from infected individuals. Investigators defended the deliberate injection of these children infection of these children by pointing out the vast majority of them would probably acquire it anyway at Willowbrook because it was such a filthy facility that they'd probably get it anyway. And so it's better to infect them on purpose and then control the research conditions. In Macon County, Alabama, from 1932 to 1972, the United States Public Health Service withheld treatment from a group of poor black men who had syphilis so that they could study its effects. They wouldn't treat them because they wanted to study syphilis. And, you know, they're just black men, I guess, is what they figured.
That's from 1932 to 1972 in the United States. So in response to Hitler, not only Hitler, but that kind of thing, the thing in Macon County and the thing at Willowbrook, all around the world, countries have developed guidelines regarding human experimentation. And all of them prohibit, the most important and widely accepted documents that emerge from that are the Nuremberg Code of 1947, the Helsinki Declaration of 1964, and the Belmont Report in 1978. And there's some variation in what's emphasized in each one of those, but all of those codes are based on the foundational importance of the concept of a person who's being experimented on must give consent to the experimentation in order for it to be ethical. That's not the only principle, but that's the overriding one. And the main point of all of these things is that the state is responsible to protect the weak from the strong. Now, that's the world coming up with that as an ethic. They're right on target. That is exactly what the Bible teaches as one of the main purposes of secular government, to protect the weak from the strong. That's why we punish criminals. And we don't carry out experimentations on those who can't defend themselves and can't give their consent. And the thing you have to know about cloning is that's exactly the kind of thing we would be doing with cloning. There are substantial health risks, even to the donor mother and to the mother who carries the baby. It can make the donor infertile. The one who donates the egg could become infertile. It's a very invasive process. It's dangerous for the woman carrying the clone. One-third of pregnant... Now, again, they haven't done this with humans, but with animals. One-third of pregnant cows who were carrying a clone died from complications late in the pregnancy. But much worse than any of that is the risk to the baby, the clone, who is just like the retarded kids at Willowbrook or the Jews in the concentration camps. They're subject to the experimentation without giving their consent. The vast majority of implanted clones die before birth. It just doesn't work well. And the ones that do survive usually die prematurely. They age way too fast. They're plagued with terrible birth defects. Their organs are the wrong size. The most successful animal clone was Dolly, the sheep, who had all kinds of defects and aged very quickly, got arthritis very young, and then died young. And even if they could get to a high success rate with animals, which doesn't seem like they will, that's no guarantee that it would be safe for humans, since humans are so much more complex. Several hundred eggs is another issue. Several hundred eggs are required before one successful attempt at cloning can occur. So even to do the research on this would require a huge number of women's eggs to be donated. And given the risk and the invasiveness and the harm of the harvesting procedure, the only way they would ever be able to get enough eggs is to offer financial incentives. And doing that would encourage the exploitation of women, especially poor women who are desperate and don't understand the risks. So I see a huge number of problems with cloning. And I think that the fact that it promises to maybe give us insights into how to cure diseases is not a sufficient... I mean, that's a good thing, but it's not sufficient reason to put all those children at risk of death and birth defect and everything else unnecessarily.
I've been wanting to know that since the clone wouldn't be a creation of God, but it have a soul.
Yes. The question is, would the clone have a soul since it's not a creation of God? And I think, number one, it would be a creation of God and that it would have a soul. So I think clones would, if we could clone a human being and if it worked, once you got a living human being, that it would have a soul, just at the same in the same way that as soon as the conditions are there for human development, where you have a cell that's basically the equivalent of a fertilized egg, then I think there's a soul there. So it would be a soul, but it would be a person who would be subject to all kinds of suffering needlessly. Now, if somebody's subject to suffering that's not needless, like if you have a baby and the baby has some terrible disease, that's not needless, that's God's doing. But God knows what he's doing when he allows for that. But that's no reason for us to purposely put people in dangerous situations. So if God allows you to get the flu, then he knows what he's doing, and that's a good thing. But that's no excuse for me to take some flu germs and inject them into your arm. Right? So, okay, good.
Is there a danger of the clones not being thought of as people?
Oh, yeah.
Because people are that it shouldn't be done for procreation, just for medical research, that they just want to create the clones to do medical research.
Right.
And for organs and...
Yeah, just create the clones. They won't have a soul. And so we can just do whatever we want, take their organs, mess around with them. That kind of attitude is already prevalent. And I think that's exactly what would happen. I think they would be second-class citizens. I think that's why everyone, you know, lots of people want to be cloned, but nobody wants to be a clone. That's the way we think of it. That's the way we would think of it. And it would be the abuse of what I think would be human souls.
And I've heard that they said it would be more ethical. Like, you know, they're arguing for certain types of laws.
Right.
And there's one that they would, if they killed them, then that would be more ethical.
Right.
If they killed them at some point.
Right. So they don't have all the defects and all. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's just a utilitarian argument so that they can get what they want. Yeah. So if you didn't catch my view, I think cloning is unethical. I think it's cruelty to animals. But we'll get to that too. So, all right. Any other comments before we? Okay. Let's close in word of prayer. Father, thank you for this brief time. And even though this session, Lord, we haven't really spent any time in your word, still we're looking at these principles and comparing them to the things that we've already learned from your word so that we can measure the crooked against the straight. And we thank you for the clarity of I mean, there's nothing in your word that even remotely mentions cloning, and yet the principles are so clear that we can instantly see where they violate the thoughts behind all this move towards cloning. So I pray, Father, that you would give... I thank you for that counsel, Lord, that President's Council on Bioethics and the excellent reasoning and very biblical reasoning that so much they came up with in so much of that report. And I pray that that would have an influence on our leaders, that they would be persuaded by the rightness of your truth, even though they're blind to the gospel, many of them. And we pray that that would prevail, that thinking would prevail, so that there wouldn't be such needless suffering created by us just because we want to alleviate some other suffering. Lord, thank you so much for this church. I pray that you bless Creekside and these folks this week, and that they would have a great week, and that the principles that we thought through this morning would linger in our hearts throughout this week, that you would minister to each other through each of us and through the spiritual gifts. We pray this in your holy name. Amen.